welcome listeners to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a health journalist covering health, food, the environment, public policy, science, media, and popular attitudes for going on two decades. Here on Progressive Radio, I've had Connect the Dots, this wonderful radio program, every week for the last 4 years, where we connect the dots between your personal health and your total environment, everything going on in our society that's really the context for our health. For many years, I covered all the personal things that we can do to better individual health. And then I began to see more and more and more the things we need to do together with others as a society to protect our health and life on Earth. So that's what we cover. And every week we talk with different experts, authors, advocates, artists, psychologists, and others about all the different facets of what we must understand to protect our health. This week's show is exciting in I wish it weren't happening kind of way, and it's really something that I hope you'll agree with me after you hear the topic on today's show and you know, kind of step up to help the people taking action about it. We're going to be discussing, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot on Connect the Dots is, you know, what's going on a bigger level, on a systemic level, on a societal level, how various public policies or public decisions, you know, have health and environmental impacts or affect the food supply, other things like that. I've covered fracking extensively and really was the first news cycle reporter to consistently cover it beginning back in 2009. And, you know, one of the things we do on Connect the Dots is both look at the big picture and look at how things connect. Our mode of science looks usually down and, you know, what we call science measures, you know, one chemical action or one kind of mode of action and then the effects it produces. And what we're not so good at is looking at how things interact together, how, you know, a particular group of conditions enact with another thing that might happen, enact with another group of conditions to create, you know, sort of the outcomes that we experience. They're not just all, you know, as simple as like hitting a pool ball into the pocket. You know, some of them are rather complex and sometimes without realizing it, in a country with many profit-oriented drivers acting upon us and our health at all times, you know, we set different things in motion from different directions that when they meet together and collide, have you know, greater unintended consequences than they may have had singly on their own. And that's what we're going to be talking about on today's show. We're going to be talking about the risks, you know, when two powerful energy forces come into too close a proximity. And the two that I'm talking about are high-speed gas pipelines and nuclear reactors and nuclear power. Those are the two that I'm talking about and we'll be talking about with our guests on today's show. So let's bring them in. Our first guest, we'll have two guests today. Our first guest is Susan Van Dalsen. She's one of the co-founders of an organization called Stop the Algonquin Pipeline Expansion, or SAPE, S-A-P-E, and we'll be hearing more about that and what that actually refers to throughout the program. So first, welcome to you, Susan. So glad to have you with us today, and you've been a guest on the show before.
Yeah, thanks, Allison, so much for inviting me back on the show. Appreciate it. Things have heated up a bit since our last conversation.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. As you know, I'm also researching an alternate article, which on this as well as this radio program. I'm doing both things because I think the viewers will agree once they've heard the full story here that it's that important. Joining us today as well is a second guest who's here for the first time. So delighted to have her. We're friends on Facebook and have shared exchanges and you know, activism efforts many times. Courtney Williams. She has a very impressive scientific background. She has a BS in molecular biophysics and biochemistry from Yale University, and also holds a PhD in molecular biology from Princeton. She completed her postdoc training in biological engineering at MIT and currently works as a cancer researcher. We'll also talk later about how some of the things we're going to be discussing in terms of pipelines on this program directly impact her as a nearby resident to the activities that we'll be talking about. But I think the risks that we're discussing are not merely confined to, you know, a single county or neighborhood. With the powerful forces that we're talking about, you know, coming into play in ways that don't really seem that. Area is at risk, but we'll talk about that more throughout our program. So let me first ask you, Susan and Courtney, just to introduce again our listeners, what is the Algonquin pipeline expansion that we are concerned about here? What does that mean and what does it consist of?
Would you like me to start?
Please.
Okay, so Spectra Energy is a pipeline transmission company, and they are based in Houston, and they have many pipelines all over the country. So we discovered that there was an expansion plan for our area about a year and a half ago, and it happens to be crossing through Westchester, Rockland, and Putnam counties. And there are some new segments. They like to say that it's just following an existing route. Well, it's first of all going to be enlarged tremendously in parts, and there are new sections, one of which is the one we're going to talk about near the Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant. It also happens to run very near the school where Courtney's daughter will be attending kindergarten in the fall this year, and a historic Catholic church, and then many other issues related to this pipeline along all the way up through New England. We've actually coordinated a lot with the groups all the way up into Boston, and that's been part of what we've been doing for the last year and a half in educating the public and many other activities and actions.
Okay, that's a great introduction. Let me just also just tease forth a little more. You know, as regular listeners to this program know, I've covered fracking, had many, many programs on fracking. And as time has passed, you know, first the issue is simply the industry myth, oh, fracking is perfectly safe to its communities. No effect on, you know, the water, the air, any of that. No problem whatsoever, you know, was the long promise. And we spent years debunking, you know, that industry PR. But then it kind of moved along because it's not just really only, and of course we moved along and actually banned fracking in New York State, which is a huge milestone that just happened a few months back in December. But also the gas that's being drilled, wherever it's being drilled in Pennsylvania and elsewhere across the country and world, has to be transported. It has to be transported to American users, to its end users here in this country. A lot of it is planned for export. To be liquefied and exported. And so what we're talking about here with these pipelines is these pipelines carry this gas. So this is the gas from fracking, and it's being carried by a pipeline. And so these pipelines are being expanded or built like this one in order to carry it where, you know, to end users of all stripes there. This particular pipeline, I remember when the very first Spectrum pipeline was proposed to go under the Hudson River and into the West Village area. There were several years of protests about that, and unfortunately did not prevail, you know, the advocacy groups that opposed it did not prevail. One of the big concerns is that these big pipelines carry some explosion risk. These pipes can fail. They can fail when down fracking in the gas. They can fail in various ways when they are in pipelines. You know, the bigger the pipeline, the more the gas, the more the pressure, the more the risk, obviously. Can you just give our, you know, either you, of you, Susan or Courtney, give our listeners some background in the San Bruno explosion or other recent explosions? In other words, just the overall risks and concerns of gas pipeline explosions.
Well, I guess it's up to, you know, Courtney wants to answer. We had a pipeline expert look at this. Maybe she could explain a little bit about what the pipeline expert concluded and submitted to the town of Cortland as a report and into FERC.
I don't want to talk about Cortland. I want to talk about San Bruno. I want to talk about prior known accidents.
Right. You know? He did an analysis of San Bruno also.
Okay. Yeah. I just to describe to people what happened in San Bruno so that they just understand, you know, that this is not, you know, something that never happens. This is something that's happened and happened repeatedly. There have been explosions. So just give people a little background on San Bruno and what went on there. Susan, if you would. Thanks.
Oh, sorry. Well, San Bruno is a community in California, and a pipeline exploded. It was only a 30-inch, and the pipeline that we're talking about here is a 42-inch diameter. And there were 8 fatalities, but at the time they believed that it was sort of at a point in the day or the evening where a lot of people weren't even home, so it could have been far worse. There was a huge crater. I believe something like 24 homes were leveled. It was extremely high impact, and the fire from a gas explosion is just a huge fireball. And from what this expert has said in his reports from analyzing that and other pipeline explosions is that there are multiple blasts. There might be one huge fire, and then there might be more, others after. And the key is to put out the fire. You need to shut down the gas.
We're getting a little ahead of ourselves here. I'm just trying to give the context for why historically, listeners can understand why there are concerns about the safety of gas pipelines wherever they go or in any community that they go in, because they do fail. There have been explosions. San Bruno is the most notable one. What you're describing, where a neighborhood was leveled, would be of concern to anybody. And as you mentioned, this pipeline that we're talking about is going to be, going through New York and all the way up to New England. And of course, it makes sense. There's flammable gas being carried by these pipelines. And so if they're not, if the pipelines are not immortal, if they're not never, ever, ever, ever prone to failure, and it's just something that someone is hypothesizing that maybe such a thing could happen. But, I'm just aware because of San Bruno going back, a number of years, this is a risk for anywhere that a pipeline goes, because they can fail, and they have. And they contain, something highly explosive going, very rapidly, and that's how that whole neighborhood was leveled. So let's move forward and talk a little bit about the concern specifically. I mean, this pipeline, as you said, is going to go through multiple states. There are other pipelines in the country that are going through various regions, and they have pollution risks of various kinds in terms of and we've reported on that on this program before in terms of, air pollution, water pollution, volatile organic compounds, health risks. I mean, maybe you'd like to, Courtney, briefly comment on, just some of the risk factors of concern from a health perspective in the, in the regions where these pipelines and their accompanying compressor stations, which is kind of like a station stop on a subway or something, or a train, where, the gas has to be compressed again, or, kind of to keep it moving through the pipeline. Maybe you could discuss a little bit for our listeners what some of the, most immediate kinds of health concerns are, Courtney.
Sure. So these compressor stations are basically spaced out along the pipeline And their job is not only to pressurize the line and help push the gas along the pipeline, but also, when necessary, to alleviate the pressure in the gas pipeline. And they do that by basically venting the natural gas into the atmosphere and burning it off. When these compressor stations are built, a lot of them are in residential areas very close to homes. And so you've got all of the same components that are released at fracking wellheads that are causing health problems also released at these compressor stations. And the science behind the health effects of that is still emerging. I think some of that is in part to the fact that not a lot of funding is pushed towards this, and there has been kind of a concerted effort by energy companies to kind of keep a lid on the health effects of these. For instance, we're probably all familiar with the Halliburton loophole that allows these companies to not have to disclose exactly the chemicals that they're using during fracking. But so we know, for instance, that in the Marcellus Shale, there's high levels of radon.
Right. Radon is... I think we'll discuss this more thoroughly in the second half of the hour, but I'm glad that, you know, you've kind of given an introduction there to our listeners and, you know, and all of that. So let's go back to, basically what we said, just to summarize, is that on the one hand, there's a critical, more emergency, higher order of danger risk in a pipeline explosion. There is a lower chronic order of building health risk in the emissions of these pipelines and compressor stations. Okay.
Yes.
So that would be at every inch along the way, you know, that's happening all the time. The first case scenario is an immediate crisis. It's the kind of thing that, you know, we hear about when there's a major explosion of one kind or another. Now we're putting, it is proposed, indeed, it is planned, and the plan is moving along to put this pipeline, this gas pipeline, potentially explosive, right near to Indian Point, which is in Westchester County, New York, and it is a major nuclear reactor, albeit an aging one. Is it safe, and who in the government is overseeing, Susan, whether it's going to be a safe, you know, what the safety concerns or risks might be, and whether it's okay to green light this, to put it, you know, an potentially explosive gas pipeline near to a nuclear power reactor in Westchester County, New York, which is, you know, a half an hour, 40 minutes north of New York City. And I actually just returned 2 weeks ago from weekends ago. I attended a nuclear power conference led by Helen Caldicott, who has been a recent guest on this program. People, listeners, can go into our Connect the Dots archives and talk more about that. But my point in bringing that up is they showed a lot of maps that show if there's a nuclear reaction, how far this could go. And it's far. It's far enough for anyone, not even in the neighborhood as you all reside, but down in New York City and New York metro area, to be concerned if there were to be, for any reason, a risk of a gas pipeline triggering any kind of blowout at a nuclear reactor. What is that risk, and who is deciding whether it is safe to do this?
Well, I think that the risk is, quite frankly, unknown. No independent third-party agency or company has done a transparent risk assessment of this. We kind of have a situation of the fox guarding the hen house. The safety assessment was done by Entergy using information provided by Spectra. And the NRC and FERC both took everything that was said in that assessment at face value.
Okay, let's pause for a second here and define for our listeners who the NRC, we mean the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
Yes.
And they oversee all nuclear reactors. And then who is FERC, and what role do they play?
Sure. FERC stands for the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and it is their job to approve interstate gas pipelines and other kind of energy infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so the main worry is that Spectra provided information to Entergy. Entergy didn't independently verify that information. They used it for their safety assessment. Mm-hmm. The NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and FERC both took what was supplied to them by Entergy at face value without otherwise confirming any of that information. Mm-hmm. So now we have two corporations that want to make money off of this energy infrastructure, and they are the ones that have conducted the assessment. And no one is independently verifying the information they have provided or otherwise performing an independent and transparent risk assessment. And why that risk assessment is so crucial is because risk assessments do two things. One, they look at the risk of something happening. So they look at the risk that there might be a rupture. But the other part of what they do is look at what would happen if there was a rupture. So even if, you know, so, and I think that that's why it's important to conduct one, because we can imagine in our worst nightmare what the outcome would be if there were a rupture near Indian Point, which would be the evacuation of the entire New York metro area and much of the tri-state area. But what we don't know is the risk of that happening. And that's
in other
because
words,
we only have words. Spectra and Entergy's word for it.
Okay. So in other words, we know there is a risk, but we don't know how great a risk, and we don't, you know, we don't, well, obviously we don't know the outcome of such mm-hmm. a risk. And evacuation, I just have to comment, evacuation assumes that, you know, if something happened, there would be, you know, time to evacuate people rather than a series of hair trigger crises, one building on another and accentuating another. So basically what you've just said, Courtney, is that the people who are evaluating this and providing the core information that is used in the evaluation are concerned. You know, they have a dog in the fight. They want to proceed. You know, they're not independent assessors in any kind of way, and even the basis of the decision is not being made from basic information that appears to be independently derived or accurate. So let's just, you know, Susan, do you want to rejoin us here and just describe the situation? A rupture basically means the pipeline breaks. What happens if, for some reason, the pipeline ruptures? What are the sequence of events that should be of concern? What could happen there if it breaks?
I think I started to say that before, and it is based on what Rick Kuperowitz, the pipeline expert, you know, described was a huge fireball and then multiple detonations. And basically he painted a scenario for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that was quite jarring and frightening to anyone who might have read or listened to it. And he also brought up something that was very frightening, that the radius, the impact radius, the PIR they call it, is very difficult to quantify, and it could be very underestimated at this by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and FERC. And I don't think you've mentioned that FERC did give a green light to this. So we're in a kind of an urgent moment now, because our senators have called for an independent risk assessment, and FERC went blithely ahead and gave the green light, despite the fact that the public, the experts, the senators, a congresswoman, an assemblywoman, and many other elected officials raised these red flags. So I think that we all have to act immediately. This is an emergency now. And it's if you would like more details about what the impact would look like, there's an official transcript that we're going to put on our website that came from a call with the NRC and two experts, a pipeline expert and a nuclear expert.
All right, let's let's just do this way, shall we? Because I know you're going to have to leave the program. We'll be shortly and to continue with Courtney. So I just want to get those last goody bits of your time here. Folks, you can go to the website, Stop the Algonquin Pipeline Expansion, and that's the organization that Susan and others have founded. And at that website, which is www.sape2016.org, and I'll mention this throughout the program as well. And you can also find them on Twitter, SAPE2016, and on Facebook. You can get a lot of information. Most importantly, you can take action. You can stay in touch with this process. You can sign a petition. You can learn more. You can contact your public officials as well. It's highly impressive that the two senators signed on for this, because they've largely were silent throughout the entire fracking debate, and it takes quite a lot to get them to bestir. The fact that they were worried and nervous as well they should be is an impressive, it's both a tribute to your impressive organizing, Susan, and it's also, points to the very real danger here. So I know you just have another minute or two, but can you, one of the things that's at debate here, as you mentioned, is how far a radius could be affected, and I guess that depends on how this house of cards spills. But one of the things that I have seen in some of the testimony and other things is that it appears that FERC based its decision to proceed on the understanding that if there were a rupture, it could be the pipeline gas could be turned off within 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. That was the assumption. That's the core of the issue here. Mm-hmm. That assumption was not verified. There is no verification. And the question is, why would NRC accept that and FERC accept it if the only place that anybody seems to be able to get some sense it's coming from is, as Courtney said, Entergy and Spectra? So our senators, yeah, they wrote the letter. We are grateful to them. And yes, we've worked very hard to get them to show concern, and they are concerned. But they are probably the only people now, and maybe our congresswoman, anybody in Congress at the federal level, who can stop this from continuing on this path. Because their federal officials, and this is a federal aid, two federal agencies that basically broke the law, according to our experts. So
they broke the law, and let me just clarify the misrepresentation, basically by saying that something could be, that the gas could be turned off in 3 minutes, when in fact it must be done by, it's not automatic. It's not like pre-programmed. Oh, we felt something breaking. Oop, it automatically turns off. No, this requires a human being in a distant location to read monitors and to, from those monitors, be able to make an assessment and then to, stop the gas from coming. Mm-hmm. In scenarios that I was reading about in some of the backup literature on this, apparently, it could be several hours before an explosion of this type, a leakage leading to major explosions, would even be detectable on these distant monitors. And in fact, an hour to several hour wait period would be typical, not a 3 minute period. So this is not just, how inappropriate, how wrong, how criminal that these energy companies presented the reality in terms of the danger, but they have underestimated it by a huge order of magnitude. And this is criminal endangerment, really. Because, to say it could be stopped in 3 minutes where it takes 3 hours, and we're not talking about, something off in a corner. We're talking about within a half a mile of a nuclear reactor. So I want to discuss this more. We're going to thank you, Susan, for being with us today. We're going to take a short break for station identification here and connect the dots. And I'll be continuing this conversation with Courtney Williams. So kind of keep connecting the dots and see what we're talking about. If this pipeline within a half an hour of a nuclear plant were to rupture, what could be the sequence of events that unfolds? So stay with us, listeners. Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots. It's Allison Rose Levy bringing you the second half of the show. Thank you for staying with us. If you were with us for the first half, we have a very exciting, too exciting topic today. We're talking about the connections and risks when gas pipelines and nuclear power get too close together on today's show. If you missed the first part of the show, you can find us in the Connect the Dot archives. If you're enjoying the show, please like us on iTunes and let your friends know as well. Post it on Facebook. Say this is a must listen. Indeed, I think it is a must listen for everybody in the New York metro area, if not beyond, because we need to be looking at what I call negative synergies. You know, when two bad, powerful energy sources get together in an endangering way. And our guests today, we had two guests, and one has moved on, was very helpful and terrific. She's the founder of a wonderful organization called Stop the Algonquin Pipeline Expansion. Again, that is a gas pipeline, a 40-plus inch gas pipeline going through New York, all the way through New England. Our particular concern is that it's going quite near to the nuclear point, Indian Point, rather, nuclear reactor north of New York City. It's going quite close, and gas pipelines are notable for their explosion risks. Staying with us and talking with us for the rest of the program is Courtney Williams. And what we're talking about, what we were discussing in the first half of the show, was the fact that they're, the people who were kind of making sure that this is safe, an organization called FERC, in conjunction with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, have recently approved this to go ahead, and they're a federal agency. But in fact, the information that they based this on was the reports of safety of the two energy companies, the producing company, the pipeline company, who, you know, have a vested interest in this proceeding. You know, they took their information, and information is just now coming to light that it was falsified information. And what the information was presenting was that if there were up to be a pipeline rupture, not an event that could be ruled out, that it could be that it could easily be shut down by, you know, human operators at a distance, you know, of their own accord. There's no automatic fail-safe here. Within 3 minutes, where in fact it usually takes several hours before these, you know, monitoring people at a distant location can even detect a change in pressure. And in, so that, you know, so what would be going on, Courtney, if you could just reiterate for our listeners that may have missed the first half of the show, as these people, you know, wait for their monitors to kind of reflect a dip in energy or a dip in pressure, which typically it might take, what would be going on at the site if there was a rupture?
Sure. So I do want to clarify, we don't have any evidence that the information was falsified. Mm-hmm. However, none of the information has been verified. That 3-minute window it was provided by Spectra. Mm-hmm. It was accepted by Entergy and passed on to the NRC and to FERC. None of those agencies verified the information. Mm-hmm. So from working with Rick Kuperwitz from Accufax, who is a well-respected pipeline engineer who's often called in after a rupture to try and tease out what's happened, basically if there were to be a pipeline rupture, it wouldn't be instantaneously clear to the pipeline operator in Texas that it was a rupture. So in their control room, they have lots of, they'll get lots of readings, there'll be lots of alarms, and from that information, they have to tease out that there was a rupture and decide to turn off the gas. So mm-hmm. he gave an estimate about 10 to 20 minutes before the operator would be aware that there actually was a rupture, and then it would take several minutes to turn the gas off. During that time, there would likely be an explosion or multiple explosions. The valves are spaced about 5 miles apart, so even if they were to close off a valve, you have all of that gas left in the pipeline to burn off. Mm-hmm. From talking with Paul Blanche, a nuclear engineer, and Rick Kuperwitz, a pipeline engineer who have looked at this, at the information and the data, it probably would not, breach the reactor or anything like that if there were an explosion. The worry is that it takes however long it will take, most definitely longer than 3 minutes, to shut off the flow of gas. But then you have to wait for all of the gas that is in the pipeline to burn off. And we know from other pipeline explosions that have happened that this can easily be upwards of an hour, in some cases multiple hours, where the pipeline continues to burn. And it's the heat generated by this continuous burning that is going to pose the greatest risk to Indian Point. Because while the pipeline is about 1,500 feet from the reactor, there are critical plant infrastructure items that are much, much closer to the pipeline. From Entergy's own assessment, they have critical infrastructure only 105 feet from this pipeline. And so the worry is that if this critical infrastructure is damaged, is that going to prevent Entergy from being able to safely operate the plant during that time? And if there's going to be an hour or multiple hours of continuous high heat from this pipeline rupture, is that going to interfere with the safe operation of the plant? And that is what is our concern. The risk may be slim, the consequences are clearly dire, but in the absence of an independent risk assessment, nobody can really say what the risk is.
Wow. Thank you. That's a brilliant and terrific summary. Let me ask a few questions.
Sure.
You know, it's like the kind of explosion, the raging flames fueled by the gas, all that, you know, could be happening here until that gas burns out. It's not, you know, it's, I mean, 1,500 feet is not that far away from
not far at all.
It's not that far away. But what are the critical infrastructures that are nearby that could be damaged? And by their and is there another fuel source nearby that could also either be released or be inflamed or be contaminating in the wake of this explosion fire?
Sure. So based on Entergy's own assessment, they have fuel tanks that are only 105 feet from the gas pipeline. And these tanks are used to power generators on site. That's obviously a concern if those generators are necessary for continued safe operation of the plant and the fuel source for them is lost. That would be a major concern. The other is a switchyard that is only 115 feet from the pipeline that, controls the flow of electricity to and from the plant, I believe. So those are the two most closest critical infrastructure that are part of the IPEC facility, the Indian Point Energy Center, that we have concerns about, or that Entergy indicated was a concern in their own assessment.
If the electrical controls were to be melted or damaged by, you know, high heat burning gas, do these electrical controls control critical functions of some kind at the plant?
I'm not clear on that, and quite frankly, neither are the experts that we've spoken with. So mm-hmm. Obviously, the infrastructure at Indian Point is crucial. It falls under certain protections in terms of homeland security, and mm-hmm. information on its operation is not generally publicly available.
Of course.
Our experts sought some of that more classified information or that more protected information and were basically sent heavily redacted documents that didn't allow them to make any useful assessment of the risk. So our hope is that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and FERC will work together to make some of those or all of those documents available to independent experts such as Paul Blanch and Rick Kuperwitz, both of which have very high and relevant security clearances to look at this kind of information. And in, you know, so that we have someone who does not have a vested interest in the outcome or the decision that is made, who can make a more objective assessment of whether or not this is safe and what the risk is.
Well, you know, I have to say that in my reporting on, you know, a whole range of things, we've seen over and over where having a vested interest, a profit motive of some kind of, you know, it's one's job, one's industry, one's any of it, you know, does sway. And the notion that people, you know, will be objective and able to weigh in against their own interest. It's like an obligation of anything done in the public good or anything done at all, in fact. But it doesn't always happen. But this is of a more disturbing order of magnitude than, you know, almost anything else I've actually ever heard of. You, like when your experts came in, were they came in, they were neutral, they were prepared, you know, to assess the information and like tell you, well, you're worrying, there's really no problem here, or otherwise. What, after they had had a chance to review, you know, in reporting to FERC and on all of this, as they did, and testifying and all the rest of it, what was, you know, were they alarmed? Were they seriously concerned?
Yes. So given the information that they were able to assess, and certainly Rick Kuperwitz was able, he was hired by the town of Cortland to conduct this independent, to conduct an independent risk assessment for the town, not necessarily of Indian Point, although Indian Point is within the town of Cortland. And so he did have access to some of the more private, not publicly available documents, but not all of them that he would need to make a full assessment. And he basically concluded that the assessment was deficient, that there was not an adequate assessment done, and that the conclusions were unsupported. And so I think, you know, I probably speak for, I probably speak for lots of the residents closest to the plant, but I might, as a scientist, I would be, I would have my mind put at ease if these independent experts, these engineers, took a, an objective look at this data and came back to me and said, the risks of something happening are astronomical, your family is safe. But in the absence of any independent risk assessment, I do not feel that my family is safe. I do not feel, given the testimony to FERC, the testimony to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, I do not feel that we can trust the assessment done by Entergy, and I don't feel that the federal agencies that are supposed to be protecting my family are actually doing their job and providing sufficient oversight here.
And you yourself are a scientist, so that you understand, you know, the rigors and where there's evidence and where there isn't evidence. And of course, you know, being right near the location, you're at more immediate risk. But if for some, you know, if for example, because, you know, and you're not, this is not your area of expertise, and I'm sure you've looked into this, if, for example, the rupturing pipeline, the conflagration, the fire, you know, were to melt electrical, you know, units that directly impacted the functioning of the nuclear reactor at Indian Point, it would be a risk to a much wider radius of the population that isn't as aware of this because it's not, you know, right there in their neighborhood and everything. Should everyone in New York be worried, do you feel, about this?
I do. I mean, I speak to colleagues and friends who kind of express sympathy to me that we're so close to the pipeline, et cetera. And I remind them, I say, like, if you in the mail got the letter about the Indian Point evacuation plan, you should be just as worried about this. because not only due to the risk that we talked about, the catastrophic risk that would could or possibly occur, but no one will assess the risk of it happening if there were a rupture near Indian Point, but also due to kind of just the chronic risk we will be at from a rupture near anyone's home or from the pollution emitted by the compressor stations. So this really is a regional issue on the level that if the worst case scenario took place, that this would impact the whole of New York City. This would impact the New York metro region, the tri-state area. I mean, I do feel that most probably the odds of that are slim, but with only the companies themselves conducting these assessments, I think we would all be foolish to just take their word for it without any kind of independent verification.
I agree with you. I think most people would. I mean, this is the essence of, you know, being cautious and planning is to look at these kinds of things. Now, let me ask you another question. At one point, it was being said, we know that in some locations, there has been an increase in earthquake activity. In areas where there has been a lot of fracking done. There are other regions where naturally there is just more seismic instability, geological instability with the possibility of earthquakes, that kind of thing. Is there any reason why that would be applicable in this area?
So with the increased seismic activity due to fracking, that's caused by injection wells for the disposal of the fracking wastewater. We don't have fracking taking place anywhere near Indian Point, and New York has banned fracking. So we're not worried about an increased risk of seismic activity due to the pipeline. However, Indian Point is at kind of the intersection of several faults there, the Ramapo Fault, and others, and is at a risk for some seismic activity. And I think that's another concern that has not been, you know, like we've been told, yes, the pipeline can withstand a magnitude earthquake that has been detected there. But I don't think that, again, that has been independently verified by a third party, because the risk assessments were conducted by Entergy with information provided by Spectra. There was no third party that didn't have a vested financial interest in the outcome to do that kind of make that kind of determination.
Well, that's worrisome. I mean, because in effect, your experts, the experts that were hired by the town, have caught them in some faulty projections and in providing inaccurate information on this, you know, pipeline rupture question and how quickly that could be addressed. So certainly that wouldn't give confidence in their ability to be the best one to do an honest assessment of other dangers. And I mean, how has it been? Let's just, you know, kind of step back for a second from this, because I think, you know, the horror and risk of it is pretty apparent. But how has it been in terms of, you know, talking with people, raising an awareness? Do you feel that most people in your region are aware of it? Do you feel most people in the affected region are aware of it? And if so, you know, we can, and if not, we can discuss that, you know, as you weigh in on that.
Sure. So I think certainly, you know, people in my neighborhood know because it's right there. However, I don't think people in the region are aware that it's happening. And I think that some of the information that comes out sounds completely preposterous. I think even that we've had to speak for this hour is kind of preposterous. Like, oh, there's an aging nuclear power plant and an energy company wants to build a pipeline next to it, and nobody's verifying any of the information, and all the federal agencies are just passing the buck and saying everything's fine. That's ridiculous. That would never happen. People kind of don't want to believe. It sounds like I joke sometimes that I feel like I'm living an Onion article because it is that ridiculous. So I think some people hear about the project and kind of write it off as this is preposterous. It's never going to get approved. No one would think that's a good idea, when actually it is happening and it was just approved, and these federal agencies are not doing their due diligence. And I'm not clear why, you know, certainly we've gotten our local kind of regional paper, the Journal News, to do some coverage, and our local Daily Voice and Patch websites have been covering this. But why this isn't in the New York Times, it's been in the Boston Globe, because there's a segment, you know, up in West Roxbury, Massachusetts, where Spectra's putting a segment of the pipeline adjacent to an active quarry where there is ongoing blasting taking place.
Hmm.
And that was also deemed as not a risk, and it was fine, and FERC approved it. So the Boston Globe is covering this, our local paper's covering this. Where are the other news agencies that would get this, you know, into the mailbox of people that need to know and do it due diligence that, you know, it does sound preposterous, but it really is happening.
Mm. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, because, you know, as a reporter, I mean, it's interesting the way you put it there with the preposterous. As a reporter, I'm frequently hearing about things, you know, from people who have a more advanced knowledge or information. And, you know, it's just kind of a part of the job sort of thing. And then if I, you know, not in every case, but in a lot of instances, I will, you know, report back. I went to a conference, I heard X or Y, I interviewed someone, I heard, you know, A, B, or C. And then people will often say, oh, that couldn't be true.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like it couldn't have gotten to the point, you know, we see that the government's having a lot of problems. You know, let's talk politics, Republicans, Democrats, you know, brickbats, news, you know, I love Obama, I don't, or whatever. But, you know, the fact that the changes that have been happening in our society can have led us to, I mean, the risk of climate change. This risk, you know, I've been reporting on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which would unleash, which would worsen all of our regulatory, you know, prospects on everything from toxic chemicals to climate change to regulating fracking. Everything would be negated by it or undermined by it, and I've been reporting on that very heavily. All of that is really kind of seen until it comes to pass as something that couldn't happen, and yet it's all happening. So, you know, I want to urge listeners to stay on top of this, pass this program along. You can go to www.sape, that's Stop the Algonquin Pipeline Expansion. So the website is sape2016.org. You can also follow them on Facebook, on Twitter, all under that name. You can follow me on Connecting the Dots for Health to get radio show announcements, as well as links to my blogs on Alternet, EcoWatch, and now Truthdig, covering some of these issues. It's really important to sort of face our own fear and take action in the face of these realities. And, you know, you're obviously a very competent scientist with, you know, terrific training from major institutions doing important work. Nobody is, like, you know, off the wall here. Maybe I'm a little more off the wall than you are. I don't know. But, you know, it's like we would all be doing something else if this kind of thing, you know, we'd be going back to our normal work mm-hmm. if this sort of thing were not happening. And so I really invite listeners to this program to share this with others and to come join us because we really have to prevent these problems before they occur. One thing that people could do right now, if you are a New York State resident, is you could write to our two senators. The SAPE 2016 website has ways to help you contact them. You can contact them on your own. Read more information, look for my article on Alternet about this as well, and face up to this. You know, it's like it's serious. It's really serious. And, you know, we don't want to believe it. If you don't believe it, instead of just dismissing it, thinking it's impossible, forgetting about it, do more research. Look into it. See if it's happening. Prove it to yourself, because this is all, you know, it's all going on right now. So what are your final thoughts, Courtney, about, you know, what you think people need to understand and what they can do?
I think the most important thing that people can do is to reach out to our federal elected officials. I think it's kind of ridiculous that, you know, Chuck Schumer has a press conference on dish detergent pods and they're in the dangers of dish detergent pods. And, you know, Senator Gillibrand's holding a press conference on the dangers of microbeads and how they're destroying the environment. Yet have they had a single press conference about this pipeline that's right here in New York State? No. It took them months. They ignored the deadlines with FERC. It took months of pressure and hundreds of calls to get them to write a simple letter to FERC urging these independent risk assessments and health impact assessments. So I would say for people to get on the phone and call Gillibrand, Schumer, and Lowy and ask, or their congressional representative as well as their as well as their senators, and ask, where are you on this? Why are you not shouting from the rooftops that a federal agency is basically bulldozing the people of New York State and endangering the people in the tri-state area by doing this project in the absence of sufficient oversight? There are federal elected officials. It's a federal agency. They need to stand up and do their part for their constituents.
I couldn't agree with you more, and very well said. Let me just ask one more question. The organization, the federal agency, FERC, that is making these decisions and has recently granted permission to go ahead to the pipeline builders, they are not really they're not actually part of the government and accountable to the people, are they?
Right. They're a commission and they're appointed. And their main job is to facilitate infrastructure development. Their goal is not to regulate it or ensure that it is safe. Their job is to just facilitate infrastructure development. And it shows because they rubber stamp and approve the vast, vast majority of the projects that come through their agency. And I find it hard to believe that that many projects are A-OK and that they're doing sufficient, they're having sufficient oversight.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially given these lapses that you discuss, you know, the failure to provide accurate information, the underestimation of the risk to, you know, a more prolonged fire and explosion of if there were to be a pipeline rupture, and then the potential deadly pathways that could follow to create something, you know, that's just almost unimaginable, truly horrific, if there were to be a nuclear reactor incident, you know, in Westchester, you know, a central point in the New York tri-state area. Thank you so much for being with us, Courtney.
Thank you for having me.
It's been great. Now, I'm really glad we met. We knew each other on Facebook, but now I feel like I really know you better. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
And listeners, you know, save2016.org, take action, get involved, and come back next week for another edition of Connect the Dots. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Oh, my way.